This podcast is in no way affiliated with the upcoming production or Deborah Harkness. All views expressed are solely our own.
It begins with absence and desire. It begins with blood and fear. It begins with the discovery of witches.
Welcome to episode 17 of the All Souls Podcast. We are so excited for this episode. We bring together a fantastic roundtable for the world of All Souls, which we are all awaiting with bated breath. So without further ado, we bring you the World of All Souls Roundtable. Welcome to a very special episode of the All Souls Podcast. I am Ginger. And I'm here with Summer, I hope, and a few other ladies. Actually, quite the troop this morning. So here with us today, we have Jill Huff, Lisa Haltonen, Colleen Madden, and Claire Baldwin. And we are thrilled to have these ladies here with us. They are the majority, of course, only sans Deb, of the contributors, editors, everything who helped create and bring us the World of All Souls. So first of all, welcome everybody, and let's jump in. So let's begin with something quite general. How did the idea for the World of All Souls come to be?
I can go ahead. This is Lisa. I remember Deb talking with me about it in, I think it was 2011, very early on. And then there was discussion of it over the next year or two. And Jill was involved. And finally, Jill and I wrote a proposal for Penguin about what we would put in the All Souls book. And it just grew from there.
Right. I forgot about that proposal. I remember thinking, this is crazy. How could we do this?
I know we wrote the proposal and I thought, gosh, I would read this book. This sounds good. Yes.
But she wasn't even done with the trilogy at that point, I don't think.
No, I think it was just after Shadow had come out.
Right. So we've been thinking about it for years.
Well, it makes sense to me that the need for the companion came out after the second book because the world got so big after Shadow of Night that it makes sense to me that you're like, okay, there's a need now because there's all these historical characters that we're bringing into the pot here. And we don't have enough room in this little slice of heaven that is the Shadow of Night to really discuss all these things and give people some backstory about how these people are all intertwining. So I can totally see the need for that coming up right out of that.
Right. We had to kind of present a case to Penguin that there would be interest in this. And that's where I was impressed at, how much interest I thought there would be.
Yeah. See, I was very skeptical the whole time. I was the skeptic. I thought, oh my gosh, this sounds, we have to work, it sounds like it could potentially be so boring. I'm with Lisa now. I think we managed to make it. All along, my sort of measurement was, okay, this needs to be something I would find interesting because I think of myself as pretty average in terms of like, I'm not super geeky about any of these things. And I think we did well.
Well, I just want to add that I think that it became a lot more interesting project after we added several more people. It was so much for one person to take on, but with a group, it really became dynamic.
Well, and now that you have segued us just beautifully into the word team, let's have the team describe each member, what their background is, and how they were chosen. In other words, what magic brought each of you to this project, and what is your individual passion in the project as well?
This is Jill. I went to school with Deb. We were in graduate school together, different programs. I was an Americanist and she was doing history of science. And then we were neighbors. And then we sort of went our separate ways. And I heard through the Facebook grapevine that she had published this book, Discovery of Witches. And I wrote to her and, said congratulations. And then we started talking from there. So, and I ended up working with her because her job got really, really big. So I haven't been with the book as long as Claire or Lisa, but I came on soon after. And I'm so, as we spoke about before, when we talked about this World of All Souls, I had a sort of an understanding of how huge this project was and was so grateful that Claire came on and really helped us think about interesting ways to put this World of All Souls book together. And I've loved the history of it, of course. I'm an Americanist, and so, but I early Americanist, so the 16th and 17th century were particular areas of interest, but just, across the pond. But also the thing that I found so interesting about the book is the way in which Deb put it together. And what I love about this book is the way the World of All Souls is the way in which it's sort of a handbook of world building for writers. It's really, she really reveals how she put it all together. And it's fascinating.
Well, this is Lisa. I was a European history major in college and really focusing on the Tudors. So that was ideal for my involvement with the work. And then I went on to get a master's in library science. But then I've known Deb for over 20 years through my sister. And when Deb first started writing the draft of Discovery of Witches, she sent it out to various friends and family and said, is this something you would read or should I keep my day job? And we all said, do it. And so being a professional editor, I started editing and sending it back to her. And I just sort of made myself a job. I just jumped in and said, I'm your editor, like it or not. And then when, as I said, in about 2011 or 2012, the idea of a companion sprang up. And it was kind of too much for any one person to do. But with a team, and especially with Claire leading the team, as transpired mm-hmm. later, it was perfect.
This is Jill. I was going to say also, since Discovery came out, I've been working for Deb as a personal assistant and now as executive director. And that means I answer a lot of emails. And so we'd get these constant questions about how does time travel work, all of those kinds of things. And so the idea of being able to, really sort of flesh out our answers instead of writing to 20 different people, sort of, okay, here's blah, 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 So we enjoyed the process of being able to really sort of explain all of the thinking that Deb had put into every little detail.
And I just have to say, I don't know how this fits in here, but one thing that Deb did that was so brilliant about bringing the team together was she put us up in this little artsy boutique-y hotel in New York City with a lighted bulldog in the lobby and portraits of dogs in the elevators and a pink sitting room. And the ideas started flowing. I mean, we stepped into Wonderland and everything came out of that. She fed us gourmet French fries and wine that Matthew picked out. And we were sparking with ideas.
But also we worked really hard.
We did. It was exhausting. It was exhausting in a good way.
We came up with these ideas like, oh, we should really make it a discovery experience. And Claire had done all this prep work, and then, which was great because, if we've learned nothing else here, which is it's wonderful to have someone do the work of a draft and then just be able to refine and bounce things off of that. And yeah, that was really brilliant. That was a stroke of brilliance on Deb's part.
Yeah. Because I was thinking she's spending a lot of money for this. I don't really understand. And by the end of the weekend, I thought the woman is brilliant.
Yes, I know. When Claire said she had to pinch herself out because it was a dream, I'm betting the pinching turned into a different kind of pinching as we went along.
Banging her head against the wall.
Yes.
In this process, what was the one thing each of you was dying to know? Or if there was something, are you still dying to know it?
Yeah. I mean, really, the thing I was dying to know was, how are we going to do all this? Because I never worked to a word count before. And so the research process, I was really curious about how that was going to work. But it was delightful to discover that these people that, you know, that will maybe get two or three lines, or they'll just be a mention of something in any of the books, that there are so much sort of underneath and behind that I think people would be delighted to know. And so, I don't know. I love all the little treasures and the little that are just scattered throughout all the things we found. And I loved the literature section. That was interesting. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh my gosh. And then science, when I got to do Plato again.
Right. Well, I agree with Jill that one of the best things was being able to delve into the books and finding that passing references turned out to be to real people. There was one point in Shadow of Night where George Chapman says they're trying to figure out who to find to help Diana figure out her powers. And George Chapman mentions a student at Oxford who charges for, I don't know if he did tea leaf reading or what, but he was a real person. And I hadn't known that. And then as Jill said, the science stuff, I just completely fell into that because it was fascinating how all these things connected.
Right. Or even the fashion. Like I remember I had to do a doublet and I had never realized, oh, a doublet, that comes from clothing being doubled over.
Oh.
Yeah. So, you know, sort of, I think, and we talked about, you know, Matthew's doublet versus, you know, so I learned all about doublets and all the different, you know, the whole book is not history, but some of the history stuff was the mm-hmm. most fun.
Oh, for me, there wasn't one thing. It was just delving further into all the research and the connections that Deb mm-hmm. had made from, you know, her work as a professor. And I just absolutely loved discovering those small details about the real historical characters or things in alchemy that I hadn't known. I really feel like I learned so much about that I kind of scratched the surface when I'm first reading the books.
Yeah, she makes these things happen. It's unbelievable.
I know. I think sometimes she thinks it really all happened because it's just the coincidences are uncanny.
Mm-hmm. Well, Deb doesn't write about any place that she hasn't actually seen. So if she hasn't already been there, she goes there. It's also an excuse for some great trips.
I will say Deb is an excellent
yes.
cook.
I was going to say, if it has anything to do with food and drink, you can take it on faith that the author is, that it's, this is personal experience.
Yeah. And actually the magical connections that Deb made while she was researching for the later books, one that really stuck in mm-hmm. my head was when she was looking for Matthew's palace in Venice and she went round somewhere and she saw on the fireplace inscribed in Latin, "What nourishes me destroys me," which Marlowe's, and I think, and that sort of makes you shiver, these amazing connections that when she was researching the books.
What is your passion for the story of this trilogy? Like what, out of all the books, all the characters, all the timelines, all the demons, witches, and vampires, what aspect of the trilogy are you especially drawn to? And did that, I want to say color, but did that influence your work on The World of All Souls?
Well, this is Lisa. I love the history of it. I also loved, as Claire said, the camaraderie of the creatures, the preconceived notions they had about each other. And then they would, you know, they got together as friends and would scoff at each other and say, "We don't sleep in coffins." You know, it was a voyage of discovery for these characters with very different backgrounds.
As I said before, just the history of it was just what was an absolute joy to jump into and work on for The World of All Souls. But also, the core theme of the trilogy about it being adapting and bridging the divides between creatures, I think it's a wonderful message of the trilogy, and a completely universal one. And I loved actually the way that came together. So with the magic, science and alchemy sections, just the way that came together at the end of the alchemy section, that theme of the books is, I think, really powerful. I think I should also say I'm a particular fan of Gallo Glass. I do always love a good Scott. I know, I'm part of the Gallo Glass fan club. So he's definitely an attraction. I mean, that's what's so amazing. The scope of the book is, you know, Deb is almost like a Renaissance woman, because she's got the wine tasting is in there. She's knows all about food, the recipes and rowing, but also it's all the science and all the real history. So I think, I mean, the world building is just not anything I've seen in a fantasy series. I mean, the scope of it, it's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, this is off topic. I honestly can't, I feel too close to the books. So it's really hard for me to sort of, I feel like I'm always sort of saying, this is my favorite part of the book, or this is my favorite person. But I will say, on the topic of Gallo Glass, that was back when we were reading, Lisa and I were early readers on this. And I remember when we got the chapter with Gallo Glass on it, I put it down. I picked up my phone and I texted Deb in all capitals, "I love Gallo Glass." I mean, now everyone does, right? Or a lot of people do. But I remember thinking, oh, I didn't know this man was coming.
Speaking of Gallo Glass, and this will be very quick because this is an aside, but it gives me chills. This is things I like about many book series, especially when you get into the story. It's more than one or two books. And you know that the author has not put that story down, right? You know that there's stuff coming in the future. We had a Northern California conventicle, and it was a very robust but small but robust group, and very dedicated fans, intense fans, all loving the series. And we met at a tea house, and we were talking about, oh, well, what do you like? What's your favorite? You know, everything you do when you meet new friends and fans of something that you have in common. And a few of them mentioned Gallo Glass. And I was like, oh, well, yeah. So Gallo Glass used to be my favorite, and now it's Philippe. But I digress. So we're talking about, oh, well, you know, not writing anything, but just being curious about the future. And I said, what is one thing that you hope to see, whether it's the first series or second series, whatever, that you most look forward to seeing potentially if they keep it in the adaptation? And someone said something that made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. And someone said, Gallo Glass. And we're like, oh, no, but he's not in book one. And then someone said, or is he? Because he's watching Diana as she grows. All it would take is a flashback. And I know we don't know everything, and I know our discussion here is not about that, but you guys brought up Gallo Glass, so it's your fault.
Oh my gosh.
Right. And we can't tell. Yeah, we can't say.
No, we're not asking. I'm just saying it's that magical thing about wondering and the characters. And like you said, it was just that chapter, and we only get glimpses of him, but mm-hmm. Holy smokes, he makes an impression.
Well, Deb knows so much about Paul.
Oh, I always want to know.
And sometimes she will say something to me and I'll say, nope, don't tell me.
I always want to know where it's going.
But she'll sort of say, well, you know what happens with so-and-so. And I'll say, nope, don't tell me. I want to be surprised.
And it's all in Deb's head, and she kind of forgets what we know and what we don't know. So she'll occasionally do something like, duh, this is going to happen. Okay.
So as you guys came together, and it sounds like Claire was the fearless leader as far as organizationally and keeping time and like a project manager, How did you, or Claire, how did you choose which areas to dig deeper into? For example, was it a consensus or was it somewhat directed?
Well, I mean, we met in January 2016, and we had a 2-day kind of very intense meeting where we talked through what the content for the book should be. And so we had a very clear outline for each section. And then we just worked from there, really. So for each section, we'd sort of discuss in more detail what should be included. And then I would write up a kind of outline and how many thousand words, and then we'd go from there. I mean, it was sometimes that you obviously, until you start writing, you often don't know what's sort of going to come up. But it actually, I mean, it's kind of stayed pretty much as that original outline, just, you know, with developments. But that's where we had to sort of be quite precise in the planning of it, because with lots of people involved in a project like this, you can't just sort of go off onto a tangent.
Right. Like, I'd like to speak to the editing process. I've spoken privately with Lisa about this, but I will read through, you know, we all drafted things and then everybody went through it, and I will read something and I'll think, golly, did I write this or who wrote the first version of this? And I think that was sort of the most interesting part of the process, is the way in which we all, you know, Deb and all of us went through everything. So it was very collaborative.
Well, I think the tone was the most difficult thing to establish. At least Jill and I in the beginning were very hesitant about, are we writing as Deb and how would we do that? And what approach do we take? And Deb said, it needs to be discovery and it needs to be fun. And I thought, great, you know, fun is the key. So that really put us on the road. But the thing is that there were backstories, especially with the science section. I'd think, oh, I'm writing about Alexander Fleming. And it turned out to be, to me, an exciting story. And that's why Colleen ended up drawing a moldy cantaloupe. You know, you never know where the excitement's going to come from.
Right, exactly. The same thing happened with fashion when we did the fashion bit. We weren't just talking about, you know, this is how this is how dresses were put together. You know, we had a specific dress and this was how Diana wore it. And I think that we were able to explain things that mm-hmm. Deb just sort of hinted at and help people imagine it better without going, you know, I know we all know like 10 times we had to sort of learn a lot more about the subject and then figure out, okay, if I were a reader of the trilogy, what parts of this would interest me? All right. You know, I'd be interested in how long it took to put a dress on.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But also, so once we'd done each section, we'd kind of bring it all together and then each sort of smooth it out and do edits. So it was a kind of living, moving thing as we worked on it.
Yeah, well, it was fun. And also, I think the fact that we did all the sections sort of with a different tone and different feeling makes it, I was hoping, and I think we did this, that you could just sort of flip through the book and get a different experience. So it's not however many pages long of, it doesn't feel encyclopedic to me at all.
After the first few sections, we kind of got into a rhythm and it was kind of clear that we all had the same idea about how it should be, the sort of tone of it, which was great, because I think it could have been much more difficult if we were trying to go in different directions.
Right. And then we have those references at the bottom of it, sort of like, well, if you liked this, see also these sections. I like that idea too.
And also we have, there are author Q&A boxes kind of all the way through where Deb sort of makes little asides about where she got inspiration for something or where she discovered something in her research. So it's almost like she's guiding you as you go through the book, which I think, again, it's really part of bringing it to life. And Colleen's done a wonderful picture of Deb. So it's like she's talking to you from the page. It's great.
that was how we dealt with, you know, if Deb needs to speak, what do we do? And it really feels, when you look at the book, it's like Deb says, hi, I got the idea for this from.
Well, and also there are outtakes, right? Everyone knows that. So there's some delicious out chapters that just didn't make it into the other books, including one of my favorite chapters.
Once you guys had at least an idea of what you were to go home and, you know, continue to work on, what was the process? I mean, how does a team of five incredibly busy people already work on something so collaborative and cohesive?
Yeah, well, I would, I basically plotted out over the year what we needed to do. And so it was roughly a sort of month per section. So I would get in touch with everyone and I'd write up an outline and give each of us our sort of tasks for what we needed to write and the deadlines for each one. And that would happen month by month, basically. And then once we'd written kind of enough for Colleen to get stuck into doing the illustrations, then I would write up briefs for each section for the illustrations as well. And Colleen and I would talk about sort of looking at different drafts and that developed in tandem with the writing as well.
Yes, Claire broke it up into bite-sized bits. I mean, we started at the macro level with what are the broad categories and winnowed it down to smaller and smaller chunks. And finally, it would turn into write me 3,000 words about, 16th century dress.
But then we all read everyone else's and would write comments on them and would edit.
Yes.
So then Deb read everything and would rewrite things. And so everybody, you know, had a hand in everything else that was written.
But as far as the research was concerned, I think I wrote something about dance, the role of dance. And the internet is a wonderful thing. I ended up ordering the manual for 16th century dance, the manual. And so I learned about all these different dances. If it hadn't been for the internet, I don't know what I would have done.
So we see from just a glimpse of the upcoming The World of All Souls in the absolutely gorgeous sampler that you guys were so kind to have sent us. And we see that one of the things it does contain or include is the table of contents without, you know, just the zero pages, but it has the organization of the book. Now, are those the categories or the topics that Claire or that you all kind of broke it down into?
Yeah, so it starts with, there's a Q&A with Deb talking about her inspiration for the book and for the trilogy and where all the sort of key ideas came from. And then synopses kind of help orientate the reader and remind them of the stories. And then the creature section that goes through the four main creatures of All Souls and the customs and the mythology behind them. And then the characters is an A to Z of the characters of All Souls. And then organizations is all the kind of the key. So the Knights of Lazarus and the Knights Templar and the congregation. And then the location section is a big one. That's all the different locations that are featured in the books. And then we've got the magic, science, and alchemy. And that's followed by decorative arts, which it's all the artworks, basically the Claremont catalogue that we were talking about earlier. And then lifestyles, there's so much in there. So it's recipes and wine tasting and dancing, Renaissance dancing and chess. And then the literature section, which is it's one of my favourites as well. It's very much a book about books. So with the mythology, the alchemical works, the plays and the prose in the book. It's a very wide range of sections. Talking to you from the page, it's great.
I know we only see a few of the illustrations in the sampler, but it's, oh my goodness. like all fans, I'm patient, but I want the guide yesterday.
Yeah, I forget in the thing that you have, is there any of the entries for the different people? Because I think that's one of my favorite things that Colleen did. She did like little Nicholas, is it Hilliard. Little Hilliard miniatures.
Oh, those were fun. With the toothbrushes. Those were fun.
They're beautiful, Colleen. And
oh, thank you. Thanks.
The rooms that Colleen drew, they're going to look amazing.
Oh, you got a little advanced thingy? Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm not sure what you got. Wow.
Big, like a 2-page spread of the red, see the red.
Hello?
So the red elixir vite. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You mean it's an illustration of her actual lab?
It must be. Yeah.
Well, what's the red see the? Oh, you're reading that banner up in the top. Oh my!
I believe so.
Okay, I got it. So you met Mary Sidney's laboratory. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. I may not be reading it correctly. Yes. And then, excuse me. And then, oh, it's just gorgeous.
Oh, thanks.
And then, of course, the one that Fetch Goody Alsop was perhaps most famously known for, the one with the semi-nude Diana with her beautiful markings on her back, looking over her shoulder. That one's gorgeous. And then, yeah, and then the character tree, the family tree.
That was what was in the beginning, the labor of love part. Yeah. That was a labor of love. Because every little leaf, oh no, not her with him. Oh no, they're that shape. There was just a lot of like back and forth with that tree. Because you have to get, like Claire said, we have to get this thing totally right because fans know it as well as Deb does and more so sometimes. So like you have to cross all of your T's and dot all of your Philippes.
Okay, so speaking of illustrations, that was a great segue, actually. Illustrated manuscripts figure prominently in the All Souls trilogy, specifically Ashmole 782. Illustration is also present throughout the series, especially on book covers. The opportunity to augment the theme of illumination / illustration in the world of All Souls is reflected in the number of original illustrations Colleen created for this book. Tell us about the vision for representing illumination and / through illustration in the world of All Souls and how that ties in with the story, perhaps with certain characters especially.
Wow, that was like an essay question.
I know, right?
Okay, Claire.
the vision with the illustrations is that it would be very much, it's bringing it all to life. So they're really sort of playfully weaved around the text and kind of interacting with the text in a very lively way. It's all about discovery. So there are so many codes in the illustrations with different symbols used for the characters. Looking at the real historical characters, Colleen did some wonderful John Dee doodles, which is what he used to do. And I love those. I think it was something that developed with the content, with the writing as that went along. And Colleen was just amazing about the ideas that she came up with. We're like, oh, I could do this here and I could do that. And it grew as we went along.
I always forget that Colleen is like classically trained. Because
what?
Wait for it. Because,
oh.
Because, you know, when I first saw Colleen's drawings online, she was always doing little doodles. And then, you know, I've seen her doing, you know, her children's books and things like that. And then when I look in this book and I see some of these drawings, I'm like, oh my God, I didn't know you could draw like that.
Wow. Like
it is a discovery for me. I feel like I'm rediscovering Miss Colleen Madden.
Dude, I have an art history minor. How about that?
I believe it.
I don't remember a damn thing, but I have an art history minor. But the nice thing about this book is that it, Deb and everybody in that first meeting in January, like they knew who I was and they knew who I was bringing into this. So yeah, there's a lot of like formal illustrations, but there's a lot of whimsy. One of my favorite illustrations are these little tiny dancing people. They're because they're small and sort of sketchy and kind of fun, but they're not full on marble statues like some of the bigger pieces. And then what else am I thinking, Claire? There's the John D. Doodles. Those are fun, whimsical. I mean, there's a lot of like, you know, pretty serious stuff, but then there's also like, there's so much discovery in the big disc in the decorative arts section. And you know what I was thinking, like in Sarah's grimoire, she's to me one of the best characters in this series, and she's got this amazing sense of humor, a very dry, goofy sense of humor. So because she's scribbling in that, I got to be Sarah and like put her personality in that, you know, with the illustrations and with the big double spread, like just her scrawling what she would have written down, stuff like that made it just literally fly by. It was so much fun to like step into characters visually.
Yeah, I mean, that's the real showstopper with the four double page spreads for the rooms. But also, I mean, the doublet is beautiful, the illustration for that.
Thanks.
and the Tudor dresses. And I think, I mean, also part of the idea when we were first talking about the book was that we wanted that feeling of an old book, but also something modern as well. And that's what the trilogy really, you know, it's got that rich history, but it's very modern and it's its own tone. So we wanted the illustrations to mirror that. And that's what you've done. And the beautiful portraits that Jill mentioned, the Nicholas Hilliard portraits of the characters, they look wonderful in the character section. And then also the real treat of the three bits of color in the book.
Oh my God, can we talk about that? Is that supposed to be something we're not supposed to like talk about?
No, it's a little teaser that there's a wonderful discovery for readers in it.
Yeah, well, if you guys are wondering what my brain is like, you know, on too much coffee, those three pages, baby. Especially the one with the, never mind, but I just want to say that I am a mom. I am a healthy person, but I was asked to draw things very specifically. So. Oh, you just do. Well, like the descriptions of the three pages. I mean, the one with Diana and Matthew, is that, don't yell at me, Jill, is that Conceptio?
Yes, it is. It is Conceptio.
Okay. Yay, me! I remembered. Okay, so Conceptio, that's pretty straightforward, and that's going to be exactly what fans were thinking was going to be seen. But the other two, I mean, that was sort of like, go, be free. What do you see when you think of naked people? And then just go with it.
I can't wait to see these.
That was a crazy summer night. That was fun.
Someone has mentioned that even some of the smaller or maybe characters mentioned one time have some space in the World of All Souls. How many, like not necessarily a number, not a count, but in general, will fans be able to see some of their favorite secondary characters highlighted?
Yes. I mean, the character section is, I think it's the longest section in the book. And a lot of the real historical characters have got some great backstory there. I mean, there were some mentions of we had to be quite ruthless. I remember I wanted to sort of add in a few historical characters that were just sort of mentioned in passing, and it would go on forever if we did that. But no, definitely fans are going to find a lot more of their sort of favorite secondary characters.
And the fun thing about writing about the characters and about the history was that you would discover that someone that you'd thought was a fictional character was an actual person, and real life and
oh, yeah,
fiction bled into each other until I couldn't tell what was what and what had actually happened and what had Deb had made up. It's what it's like to be an author.
She had me Google diving for so many in that section. Like, is that a real guy? Was that a real dude? Or is that yes. just like a Deb Power thing and she just made that up to like fake us? But no, like a lot of them, like Lisa said, that discovery was awesome. That was so much fun.
Yeah. And that's where it was so, with Deb being able to sort of play with the historical gaps, that's her, it was amazing the way she used her imagination for the characters that she'd, the real people that she'd got to know through her research and how they developed in the All Souls world. I really love that aspect.
Right. And they went on to do really interesting things or have interesting deaths. And so we got to tell those stories, which I thought was fun, you know, briefly. We had our word count, but.
What do you mean your word count? What do you mean by that?
We'd have a section, you know, write about Randolph. What's it was? Rudolph. Emperor Rudolph. 300 words. And, you know, you
oh,
might
you
know.
Oh, you had to enough. Keep it to 300 words?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. That was hard to keep to when you, yeah.
Right. But it was strangely calming because, you know, yes. I have just 300 words. I have to focus. Here it is.
Right.
This is all discovery to me. I had no idea you guys had to like stay to account. Oh, that must have been awful.
Well, it was flexible. You know, Claire, like if you went short, you could go short in an area and mm-hmm. then know you'd have a couple hundred more to give to someone
oh,
else.
Okay.
So.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That explains so much, Claire. That explains so much. Well, know that like that there was a limit to like what, okay, now that's going to sound stupid, but there was like a limit to like what we could put into it.
Yeah, because otherwise the book would be however many hundreds of pages wow. long. Mm-hmm.
So we could do a second one.
Well, we could, but we put all the best
yeah,
bits
did.
In this.
Yeah,
we could
yeah.
do an outtakes of The World of All Souls.
Wow.
And I think, yeah, that's, again, what's unique about this is often with companion books, they can get sort of, there's a lot of filler in there. But with this, it was the challenge was actually cutting down and kind of keeping it focused.
Speaking of the content or the range and scope of this content, will this be a standalone volume or would a fan or a reader need to have read the trilogy or for future viewed the TV adaptation to get the most out of it?
I mean, it can be read as a standalone and very much enjoyed, but it is for readers of the All Souls world. So you'd get the most out of it. Having read the books. And in terms of the TV, I mean, it's something, you know, you wouldn't want spoilers if you've not seen the whole series. So this is something that goes with the books.
But it's also, it kind of does stand alone in being, it's like a history of Western civilization from Matthew's birth on in all the different disciplines. And that's what I love about it is getting a bird's eye view of literature, occupations, avocations, all these things over the course of 1500 years.
Plus, I would hope that it would just stay in the land of books because, I mean, as awesome as the TV show is and as awesome as that way to depict what she wrote, the books are kind of like their unique mm-hmm. own little thing. And this is just another love mm-hmm. affair to the books. I mean, for me as a fan, that's what I love about this project. This is a love affair to those three books, without a doubt. I mean, right. The TV show, I'm sure, is going to be fab. But like, this is just like, if you love these books, this is a gift to you from the author and the people who made them. So
I also think that it would be, I think I mentioned this earlier, but if I were a fiction writer, especially if you're interested in writing historical fiction, I think this would be so useful as a possible, you know, just to sort of see Deb's approach. Because people do write to her and ask, you know, how much research did you do? And I think it's really, it just gives a sense of all the different things she drew upon.
Yeah, and it's an example of world building. It's brilliant.
So you're saying it could even be used, obviously it's huge treasure for fans, but it could be used to help someone build their own world.
Absolutely.
Go through their own process. Fascinating. It's always, because it's one thing to see, oh, that's my favorite character. I love that. I'm so glad we get to read this as an outtake because it wasn't, you know, didn't make the final cut of the book. That's all for fans, right? That's something that we all want to see endlessly. But the fact that it includes a glimpse, a wide glimpse into Deb's brain and process is fascinating.
And creepy. No, I don't mean creepy like Deb is creepy. I mean like
just you're such a demon.
No, just coming from like, you know, coming off my first author stuff, like I don't want you in my brain. I mean, it's really nice that like I'm sharing my world with you, but there I bet there's stuff that Deb is just like, no, get out. You don't need to know how I did that. You don't need to know how I, you know what I mean, Jill? Like, I'm sure there's really precious stuff to her.
Yeah, but I don't think so. I don't think she's wired that way. I think that she didn't ask us to hold anything back. And so it really does sort of pull, I mean, it's like, well, it took her 45 years to sort of build this world because she was studying Queen Elizabeth when she was, you know, 8 or 9. She had her little recipe cards that she would take notes on Queen Elizabeth on. So she's been doing this for a long time. But, you know, it really does sort of pull back the curtain. And that's what she wanted to do, pull back the curtain on this world.
And no matter how much you pull back the curtain on Deb's brain, nobody's ever going to be able to replicate it. You know, she's in no danger of that.
Right. And it's sharing all the amazing knowledge, the years and years of knowledge that she has. It's a wonderful thing to share.
Yeah, she overloaded me visually when I first started reading it. I had to spill it out someplace. It was wild. She was geeking on Queen Elizabeth when she was 8 or 9. Wow.
She was.
Wow.
Yes. But you know, we all do that, right? We all.
Queen Elizabeth? Not so much. No. Jason Bateman.
Not Queen Elizabeth. Well, we've all had things. We've all had things.
Yeah.
Jason Bateman has held up well.
Oh.
As has Queen Elizabeth, yes.
So as we begin to wind down, we would like to know about our 5 contributors. And namely, does each of you or did each of you have a ritual or a process for getting in the zone? Apparently, all it takes for Colleen is to read and then she has to go and get everything out. Did each of you have a process like or a ritual, something to get you in the zone? For example, did you immerse yourself in historical study, play specific music, light a candle, etc.? And then once you were finished with that day, that hour, either a section or you're ready to go to bed, did you have a way to close the space? And then when you got really, really kind of into something and you used all this creative energy, how do you replenish your creative mind? So a ritual, an opening and closing ritual, and then how do you replenish your energy?
Wow. I don't think I've got a sort of process. It's very much you immerse yourself in reading all the notes and reading the history and just get completely into it and be kind of in an environment where you're not going to be distracted. But I think, I mean, often it was the deadlines that would focus my mind. And I am just one of those people that if I have a sort of very imminent deadline, it's great. My mind goes clear and that's how I kind of, but then you're also panicking at the same time. Yeah, I think I didn't. So I didn't really have a process because it was so different each time, often where I'd be or, you know, what we were working on for each section. So it would always feel really good when you'd kind of finished writing it and sent it. you know, get out and go for a run or something.
Right. I mean, yeah, the panic. Right. Yeah. I mean, I did a lot of rereading of the book. So, you know, whatever our topic was, you know, I sort of Google, okay, where did that come up in all of the books? I mean, and you use the search in your Kindle and sort of read all of that and think, oh my goodness, that was a lot about that. So, you know, we have to do this in 500 words. And then, for instance, if you were doing time travel, because I think I had that one, you know, go and read a lot about knot theory and then go look at a bunch of get lost in YouTube's knots, you know, watch some things on knots and then write way too much and then let it sit for a couple days if I had done it ahead of time and then go back to it and sort of figure out, okay, if I were a reader, what parts would I particularly be interested in here? I never got anything to you early. I don't think
I know
Claire,
I
ever,
didn't
because
I just know.
Right, because we all wanted to make it sort of really rich and interesting. And so we really labored over it.
Definitely.
Really was a labor of love.
Well, I didn't really have a process either. I would read about whatever topic it was in the trilogy, online, in any books I might have on the subject, and try to find a thread, kind of a hook to attach the story to, and then attend to my word count. I mean, it was almost always in the beginning, I'd think, I know nothing about this, and then it would be fascinating to find out about it and distill it down to my 300 words.
Right. And I know Deb read our things and I would get texts from her, especially when she was going over the whole thing. And she said, wow, you guys did, you know, I spent my whole life studying this. You guys just did it. You guys captured it really well. And of course, I'm sure that was a gentle way of sort of, and I've added all of these sentences, so don't have, you know, don't, this isn't a judgment, but, you know, I've altered all of the bits, but you guys did a really good job, so.
Wow. Wow, process? I don't know if I really had one. There were sections, the creature section. I had this one sort of mental goal, and that was to like be a creature a day and just really rock out on like being like a fire witch or a water witch, because it worked for me. It like kept me like re-inspired and stuff, and to like it gave it like flair and drama. And I would go out and run and try to process the harder stuff. I would try to, you know, go back into art history and do a lot of research so that I felt like I knew what I was doing. I was coming from some place of authority when I was drawing this skyline. And then sometimes I just like, I had to just get away from it. I don't know if that happened to you guys, but I literally had to like physically pick myself up and get the hell away from it for a while to go back to it fresh because of the amount of work, because the sheer number of illustrations and just the volume of things that we were trying to do. And I think that like those gappy places going forward, like to do this all over again, I would tighten up those gappy places. I would kind of like pull up my bootstraps and be like, would you just suck it up and get back to this? And, you know, not take so many brain breaks. But so that was my process. That was one thing that I kind of like worked on as we got to the end.
Mm-hmm. It's a long book. How many pages is it, Claire?
Yeah, it's nearly 500.
And it was very hard to wind down after spending an intensive session writing this stuff. Your brain gets all fired up and then you can't sleep.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
And you're looking for sleep.
Right. And wanting someone to talk to about something.
But he doesn't want to talk about Shadow of Night because he's never read Shadow of Night. He doesn't want to talk about all the wines in Matthew's cellar because he's never read. But, you know, so you try to make it general. Yeah. Like, am I a fire witch or am I a water? He's like, what kind of witch are you? I don't know. I'll get the companion and I'll find out. But yeah, you had to talk to somebody.
That's a loaded question, Colleen. Yeah,
what's that?
What kind of a witch? What kind of a witch am I?
Apparently, I'm not a witch. I'm just a demon, and I have to accept that. I'm fine with that. Although, for like when you were talking about passions, like I love the witches. That's one of my favorite parts in all the books is the Garlickhithe. I love Goody Alsop, Catherine Streeter, you know, Marjorie Cooper, and my other chick. What was her name? Elizabeth Jackson. Like I drew those guys like crazy. I love those witches, and I love the idea that they had elemental powers. That part was really cool. Mm-hmm. Not to go way back aside, but I forgot about that part.
Is there anything else that you haven't shared yet that you'd like to share with listeners about your experience working on The World of All Souls?
It's just going to be a complete treat for. I'm really excited for the fans to get it, and also, yeah, I can't wait for it to be out in the world.
I'm terrified to be out in the world, to be honest. I don't mean that in like a bad way, but like there's, you know, the whole book pregnancy thing. I think it was Deb who told me that like writing a book is like being pregnant. And this book was like being pregnant with like seven elephants. It was huge.
Yeah.
It was a huge gestation, and it was a huge process, and it was, you know, so when it comes out, like, what if it's freaky? What if people are like, oh, this isn't what I wanted at all?
Yeah.
I know.
I mean, that.
You want them to love our baby.
I want you to hold my baby.
And I'm not usually that confident, but I'm so sure that people are going to love this because I love it as if none of us wrote it.
Well, if you love it, I'm good.
Yeah, and I think that's what, you know, as fans of the All Souls world, we wrote that with, you know, what would we love to read about and what would we find fascinating? So, yeah, fingers crossed everyone else thinks that too.
What are some of your upcoming projects, each of you, that you can tell us and our listeners about?
I work as a freelance editor doing structural edits. So I still work with Headline and other authors and publishers. So it's kind of hard for me. It's projects are kind of too early on for me to talk about. There's one book that's just come out called The Coffin Path by Catherine Clements, which is absolutely brilliant. And that's something I've been working on. It's a ghost story set on the Yorkshire Moors in the 17th century. And it's really brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And then there's another one that's just a fantasy series called the Winnowing Flame Trilogy, which is absolutely brilliant. And the first book's called The Ninth Rain. And the second book, The Bitter Twins, has just come out. So that's my exciting, yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, I'm always at the ready to be Deb's editor if she needs me, and also the chronicler of the arcane details of the All Souls world.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So that's an ongoing process.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
Right. So there's a little book called Time's Convert.
Just a little
book. Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
So that's what Lisa and I are. That's the next project we're working on.
I can't wait to get my hands on that book as a geeky fangirl. I'm dying to read that. Dying.
And that will be out in September, thanks, won't it?
Yes. Yep. September.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's the same in the UK as right. well.
Oh, wow. Wonderful. Okay, perfect. Yep. And Miss Colleen, can you talk about anything?
Yeah, I can. I'm actually I'm working on another book about a famous chick and her dog, and it's a children's book. And yeah, I know it seems to be my niche. And then another one, which is I'm really excited about. It's called The Cheese Bards, and it is about a story about Shakespeare's Globe and another place. And that one's going to be a lot of fun. And then we're just putting to bed my second author-illustrator book, and that's called The Kitty Table, and that's about Thanksgiving from my sister's perspective. And as it's also a children's book. And then a bunch of other stuff I can't talk about. So it's going to be another psycho year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the year of Deb. Yeah, it's the year of Deb with the Times Convert and the World
Oh, my
of
gosh,
Google.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really exciting after, the Book of Life I think it was 3 years ago now. So it's, yeah, the riches.
Yeah, it is going to be a crazy year. Wow.
It's so exciting, though, because, yeah. I mean, gracious, you have The World of All Souls and then a little bit of a breather, and then, or at least for fans, and then Time's Convert. And then, although we don't have a date yet, all hope points toward sometime this fall for a little thing to pop on our TV screens. So, oh my goodness. This really is the year of Deb.
Oh, gracious. Oh, show. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So as we conclude, where can listeners find out more about each of you and your work? And where do you live online?
Yeah, I don't know. My social media is not so great. But but if I'm the person that answers, if anyone writes to Deb's website, I'm at info@deborahharkness.com. So if you have a question, it takes me forever to answer because lots of people have questions, but that's where I am. And I also lurk about on the Facebook, Deb's various Facebook accounts. So I'm just Deb's backup gal.
Well, I can be found on Twitter at Claire L. Baldwin. And you can also, there's a link there to my Readsy profile as well.
I am also on Twitter at Lisa the Editor. And I do have a website, although right now all it has is The World of All Souls on it, but it's haltonen.org.
I guess I'm at Lisa the Editor on Twitter. And so when you think that's Lisa and it's someone like super intelligent sounding, that is me. That's me. I'm not the freaky one she's talking to. I'm up on Twitter, but I don't know if I use that thing right. I like to talk to friends up there. I like to share art and announce stuff. My agent's like, you're not using that right. I'm like, well, I'm just going to keep using it. I'm not on Facebook or anything like that. And I don't really have time to even attempt Tumblr things again. But, you know, I think that's, is this, you mean like, so where people can find you if they need you, or you owe them money or something? Yeah. So Twitter's probably the best call. what is my thing? Oh, at the New Red Plaid. I at Lisa the Editor is not me. No, at the New Red Plaid. I'm sure if you just hashtag weird, I'll pop up.
Colleen writes the best tweets. They're all dot dot dots and emojis, and I have to read them 5 times.
Do you know why I do that? And somebody asked me that for the first time the other night. Like, it was almost like she was afraid to ask me. She was like, I've been following you for like a really long time, and everything you do has that ellipsis in the front. And I said, do you know what that is? And she's like, no. And I said, well, it's me stopping myself from saying the very first thing that pops into my head. That is my edit button right there. And so I sometimes go dot, dot, dot when I'm talking. And so then when I got up to Twitter, I talk the way I twit. So I dot, dot, dot is me taking a breath so I don't say anything offensive or weird or wildly confusing. And it works and sometimes it doesn't work. So that's what that is.
Well, we thank you all for all that you have, all of us have been through to get this round table together.
This has been birthing a baby.
Yeah.
Oh, a podcast baby.
Oh my goodness. Absolutely.
Ice chips.
And thank you, Summer and Ginger, for all your hard work.
Oh no, it's our pleasure. We're so happy that you guys stuck with us, because we know whenever you introduce technology with 6 people in all different locations, you're gonna have hiccups, and we had a few. So yeah. To Jill and Lisa and Claire and Colleen, so much for showing up again and again and again.
That has been epic.
To help us birth this baby. Thank you so much. And and it has been an honor to have you guys here with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, thank you for all the technical. Thank you.